Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? You are listening to Waypoint Radio. It is February 27th, 2018, and before February slipped away, we needed to sneak in a quick Waypoint 101 about something that isn't a video game at all, but something that we've all been pretty excited about here, and that is Black Panther, the latest Marvel film that has, I think, been very well received, thankfully, and has been very good. It was very good, and I think we've all seen it at this point, and we all want to talk about it a bit. I'm Austin Walker. Joining me today, Danielle Riendo.
Hi, hello.
Patrick Klepek.
We didn't want to do one for Suicide Squad. I kept pitching it. No one.
I know you're a big DC
to talk
fan.
About suicides. The they squad's pe- suiciding. What? They're back.
They're back. They're back.
They're back.
I guess I think okay. So if Danielle is Marvel and Patrick is DC,
oh, we know what I am.
Why
what
am I DC?
Because you were just defending Suicide Squad. What? Who are you, Rob? What are you?
Well, then I have to be Image.
You have
that,
to. Be
that
Image.
Was my thought. I knew enough even to have that in my mind.
Yeah, independent. You know, young upstart. You know,
Marvel.
You because you're consistent. And real. You keep it real, you know?
You don't hide behind a mask like all those DC God characters.
Exactly.
DC, you weak.
Oh, my God. You're going to just get flooded with much anger. Awesome. Where do we want to start with this thing? I think, Danielle, you saw it first, and then I caught it along with the rest of, with shout outs to Danica, Natalie, and Joel, who went to go see it with me. Vice did a thing where they're like, oh, we have 150 free tickets, 130 free tickets to the first 130 people who reply to this email, and we all managed to get in there in time. And then the last couple of weeks, Patrick, you and
I was
Rob
there.
Also,
you were there day one.
Were you there day one?
I saw it before all y'all. I saw it opening night, 8 p.m. Thursday.
No, I saw it. I saw it on Thursday.
Yeah, okay. I was not.
Let's not argue over who's woke, who's so woke that they.
I saw it Thursday at 7.
Saw it first,
so therefore,
please.
I'm gonna say I'm. It was. I don't make a point to see many movies these days.
Yes.
I am a huge Marvel fan. I've seen like pretty much the vast majority of those like opening night, and this one just felt like we talk about, you know, like wanting to, like when we talk about a game, stuff like wanting to see something, be part of the conversation. Like, this is not one that, like, whatever my participation in it was or wasn't, like, it just felt like a moment in a way that's like, okay, like I want to be there, and I wanted to be there for the arc of the conversation too, which is like a critical part of like how that kind of stuff plays out in the weeks after something is released.
Yeah, totally. So we just want to start with general thoughts here. Do you want to just kind of like, did we all leave it feeling pretty good?
Hey, wait, let me, I have a question.
Sure.
Prior to seeing this, good question. Maybe this is prior to seeing Civil War, possibly, because that's, you know, the introduction of Black Panther into the, at least into the cinematic side. Like, part of the reason I've gotten really into Marvel movies is because, like, I know very little about comics outside of, like Batman and Superman. And then, like, I've just enjoyed being introduced to, like, all sorts of, like, weird characters while watching the Marvel movies. So, like, if you had asked me, like, I might have been able to say, like, I've heard of Black Panther, I think. But, like, I couldn't have told you in the same way that I couldn't have told you anything about, like, Ant-Man. And so I'm curious for everyone else, like prior to, like, the cinematic version, like, did anyone – is it – like, I don't think any of us here is, like, super comic people.
I grew up really comicsy and and was super comicsy in college. And that's when I read my Black Panther, right? That's when I read, the Killmonger run. That was Chris Priest, Christopher Priest, who's a fantastic comics writer.
He's the one that I've always heard, like, hey, you saw that movie. You want to go read some Black Panther? You want to go read the Christopher Priest one?
Yes, that is 100% true. I read the first of Coates' run and, like, never found the time to do the rest because that's what my life got real busy. And then I've always liked Black Panther as a character in Marvel in general. He pops up now and then in the wider world, obviously, right? Like, Wakanda is pretty important, and he is a brilliant. He's like, you know, he's in the kind of the scale of character that someone like Tony Stark is like. And so there's actually been a number of really great situations where he has been like, you know what, fuck all of you rich white people who are all so smart, like, you don't know what you're getting into. One of my favorite bits is that he there's a bit in I want to say that this is back in after Civil War in the comics, where the group
to clarify, after Civil War in the comics, as in, like, after the movie Civil War in the comics, or after Civil War happened in the comics?
After the original event of Civil War that happened in the comics, which is, like, such a weird thing, because Civil War in the comics happens during the Bush era and is very much talking about government power in that context.
Gotcha.
It's about, you know, it's about, like, a black site prison and about registering people, right? And so in the context of the wars in the Middle East, in the context of the Bush presidency, that story plays out so much differently than it did when it came out under Obama at the time as a film. And I have mixed feelings about a lot of that stuff. But at the time, there was this group in the fiction, actually, this was maybe either just before or just during Civil War, called the Illuminati, which was like Tony Stark, Doctor Strange, Reed Richards, Professor X, the Submariner, and I want to say Black Bolt, who is in the Inhumans.
I think I've seen like an image from like a particular, like a very particular excerpt from this like line of comics.
Yeah,
where, like, Black Panther, like T'Challa, has like a lot of really good fucking like fuck you lines.
Yes, that's exactly
in this arc.
Yeah, and that's like one of my favorite bits. It's why I'm happy that he's in the MCU. It's like, this is the group that decided, all right, the Hulk is too dangerous. We got to put him into outer space because he's too dangerous. And Black Panther's like, y'all suck. Basically, it's like your group, you're like leaning, you're going to become the sorts of villains that like you say that you are. Not here, you know, are here to stop, basically, and puts everybody in their place and then walks away from the table and like says basically like, I'm not interested in this sort of power, right? And that is has always been the one of the big sticking points, but one of the big images that has stayed with me has been that my favorite Black Panther stories are about what the responsibility, not just like what with great power comes with great responsibility, but the notion that power itself, that authority itself is a weapon, and that he is concerned with that even as he knows he must use it. And that's like a slightly different thing than like, I'm tough, so I have a responsibility to help people, which is kind of the Spider-Man version of that story, right?
And something that the movie is very much in dialogue with is that idea of authority, how it is wielded,
right.
Where does it derive from, is very much sort of what is at the center of the Coates run.
Right.
Which is really like it's called Black Panther, but really like it is about Wakanda. It like it is about a place and a people in a way that like a lot of other comics runs are not. A lot of it is you know, T'Challa coming to terms with what it means to be a king, you know, in this era, right? Like what is owed to subjects, what do subjects owe their ruler?
Yep.
But really what it returns to again and again is this idea of like, Where does power come from? How should it be wielded? When should it be used? And how should it be distributed among people whose loyalties are ostensibly to maybe the state or the king, but there are places where those diverge.
Right.
And so that's very much what is what the Coates run is about, is this question, are these questions of like, how does T'Challa relate to his work, right? How, like, what understanding does he bring to it?
I found the panels that I was talking about. I just want to read these briefly as like,
this has got to be the one that I have in my head.
It must be. So it's like all of these other super powerful, you know, members of the Marvel universe sitting around a table, and Black Panther just like gets up and begins to leave, and Tony is like, T'Challa, and Black Panther, T'Challa, says, I'm telling you now, end this. Walk away from this table and go home. There was a reason this was actually after Secret Invasion, in which Skrulls kind of took the place of a bunch of people and made Earth fight itself. There was a reason the Skrulls had such an easy time trying to turn the world against its heroes, because deep down, everyone knows that this could happen, and now it has. You just decided all by yourselves that you are the Earth's protectors, and that you, and only you, not your teammates or your family, are trustworthy enough to include in the process. What happens when you disagree? When one of these earth-changing moments finds you all at odds with each other here in a secret meeting? What happens then? Walk away now. And then he does. And it's like, that's actually one of my favorite things about the film, is that he's never alone in terms of what decisions he's making, right? Like, one of the strongest things about Black Panther as a movie for me is its ensemble cast, ranging from the people who are very close to him, his family, his most trusted advisors, to just the broader sense of community that is at stake, right? Like, the thing that is at stake is the ruler of Wakanda someone who makes decisions, you know, on their own, or is it someone who takes advice, someone who tries to find a compromise among various factions, and who recognizes that the needs of part of his people are not always the needs that are the needs shared by everybody else, and you kind of have to balance those things. And that's mostly just delivered through great writing and incredible performance, I think.
Yeah.
And I think part of what's interesting in that little excerpt from the comic that also is like functions a lot in the film is the great irony of sorry, DC fans, like the great irony of like what like Zack Snyder attempted to do like in a series of films was like he was like very forward in saying like I want to do a deconstruction of what it means to be a superhero, and like part of what Black Panther seems to function both oftentimes in the comics and what I think the movie like functions not necessarily as this most forward facing point, but one that like it underscores is like acting as like a deconstruction of the superhero myth and like what it means to be a superhero, like when you have like a someone like T'Challa, and it actually functions as like a better, more interesting critique and deconstruction of that idea, even if that's not necessarily what it's like presenting forward facing as like the quote unquote point of the film.
Right. Danielle, had you had any Black Panther experience prior to this or not?
Just here and there. The thing is, I haven't had much comic experience in my life, and most of my exposure to a lot of like traditional comic stuff is through movies. So I didn't really, I had like I think I read some Ninja Turtles comics when I was a little kid, and then started reading like Saga and other Image comics, and I really like a lot of you know weirder indie comics. I like Lumberjanes and I like Saga. Not that that's like super weird, but you know what I mean. So it's a good. Lot People of should... this. What's that? Sorry.
People should read Saga. It's dope.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic. So a lot of sort of big superhero stuff kind of falls flat for me. Like, it feels very, very broad in a lot of ways. I think I've said before that, like, you know, watching Captain America, the first movie, I fell asleep twice. A lot of the Marvel movies where people talk about, like, being their favorite. I really liked the first Thor. I thought it was really funny. Because it kind of dug into how just funny and goofy it was. But for the most part, a lot of this stuff falls super, super flat for me. But both Wonder Woman and Black Panther, not to say that they're the same thing, they're not in any way the same thing. Those are kind of like two, you know, superhero movies that actually really hit for me and actually felt like, oh, this is actually a good movie as well as a superhero movie. So that helped quite a bit, I think.
Yeah, you came back onto our Discord after seeing it, and we're just like, everyone has to go see this movie right away.
Yep.
So I remember I was like, okay, I'll do it. That is what upgraded it from like, okay, I'll do it once the theaters get slow, to like, all right, I'm gonna go do it right away. Actually,
but I think it's curious, like, how you're responding to the movies, Danielle, because I think like I'm also like you, someone that doesn't have a huge background in comics, but when I watch the ones that like people end up like really responding to her, like saying like, oh, like this like elevates beyond like just being a pretty good comic movie, right? Like, I think people often point to like the second Captain America movie, like The Winter Soldier, which like does like put itself in and like asking questions about like government and surveillance. But compared to like I think what Black Panther attempts to do, like in terms of like the questions it asks, like in terms of like elevating itself beyond like it's like the low bar that we set for like movies where like superheroes punch each other. I'm not surprised like this is one that you responded to, because I think it is one that like goes beyond those like basic gut instincts of like what these films should be, and like it like asks like broad, like whether you agree with the answers the movie comes to, like the questions it asks along the way in the function. And I think I'm certainly something we'll probably get into about like what the answers are that like the Black Panther arrives at various questions that it invokes. But like I think part of the reason that like I have to imagine you had that response is the response a lot of people were having was like, oh shit, like it asks some like really profound questions wrapped up in like a big budget blockbuster in a way that, like, however you like fall on that stuff, I think there's a certain level of appreciation that it asked the questions at all and exposed those questions to an audience that largely probably wouldn't engage with them.
And actually asks them, as opposed to even in Winter Soldier, which everybody
has some answers, but actually has some, like,
has
that's why I say, like, whatever you think of the game, the movies, like, politics or where it ends on its politics.
Yes.
Like even like the Winter Soldier, it, like, it soaks in a world, like, because the Winter Soldier is probably the closest that the other Marvel films, like, get into the playing into sort of like a political space. Like, it asks some questions, but doesn't have an answer. Like, it just uses politics as a way to wrap itself in a context. And, like, that's part of what, like, makes that movie pretty good. But, like, Black Panther has weight that Winter Soldier does not, because Black Panther, it raises the question and then says something about it and delivering an answer. I'm not necessarily saying that answer is necessarily Ryan Coogler's answer, right? Like, he's just providing an answer in the context of this universe and these characters. But I think by doing so, it goes to much greater lengths in, quote unquote, saying something, because it actually tries to land on something, as opposed to just, well, wasn't that interesting that it asked what we should think about that more often.
So I think there's I think there's actually kind of two political answers in the movie, in a weird way. And one is not in the movie so much as it is the movie, right? And there's overlap here. Maybe we should set up, because I'm sure some people are listening who have not yet seen this movie. The core conflict of this film is that soon after...
We're going to spoil, right?
Huge spoilers, 100%.
Okay.
So going into this film, T'Challa's father, the former Black Panther, the former King of Wakanda, died in a bombing in a previous film. That was in Winter Soldier,
Civil War.
Or was that in Civil War? That was in Civil War. Yeah. T'Challa has, you know, is coming home to be coronated and step into his rightful place as king. There's a challenger. He beats the first challenger. He kind of cements his position. And as his first act, he is going to capture this guy, Claw, who years ago, came to Wakanda and stole a bunch of vibranium and killed, you know, a number of people. While doing that, he encounters someone named Eric Killmonger, who is played by Michael B. Jordan fantastically. And in the events that follow, what comes to be revealed is that Killmonger is actually cousin to T'Challa, is his uncle's son, and that his uncle had left Wakanda, moved to the United States as part of this War Dog program, which is the kind of like Wakanda, you know, secret agents society, kind of like spies, right? And while in America, T'Challa's uncle realized that Black folks across the world were oppressed, were marginalized, were put in positions that were so this is also contextualized in early 90s, like, Oakland specifically, which is really interesting, especially given Coogler's own history, right? And says, you know what, Wakanda has a responsibility to step outside of its borders and go and help people of color around the world, to arm them with super weapons, with weapons filled with the special power of vibranium to achieve a more equal society. And having known this, having learned this, the previous Black Panther, T'Challa's father, comes and kills his uncle, orphaning his son, the previous Black Panther's nephew, Killmonger, who then kind of raises himself up, pulls himself up by the bootstraps, demands justice, goes off, becomes a mercenary and a soldier, scars his flesh once for each kill he gets, and sets his sights on the throne. And then the core conflict ends up being, he shows up, He takes over the throne, and the question ends up being, what is Wakanda's responsibility for the rest of the world? How, if there was, there is no Wakanda, as the alt-right is so keen to tell us all, which, as if they just did not get the point of this fucking movie in any way. There is no Wakanda, but had there been, And if you now are someone in a position of power, if you are a person of color or someone in the margins who has somehow managed to have power, to what degree is it your responsibility to intercede? And to what degree would it have been a sin, or has it been a sin, to have looked the other way, right? Like, Wakanda did not stop. They don't say these words, but Wakanda did not stop the slave trade.
Well, there's in the intro when they sort of set up Wakanda and you're like, you know, why vibranium exists and why they're able to like be separatist from the rest of the world. Like, there's a montage in which there are allusions to various conflicts that Wakanda, like, you know, very implicitly did ignored. And like, that is both like, there's, you know, there's a rolling tank, but there's also like people being put in bondage. Like, the slave trade was shown explicitly in it. Like that was,
I wish Killmonger had said it, is one of those things. Do you know what I mean?
You know, this is a complete speculation. I, you know, there's a world where you can imagine, like, the first draft of this movie is, a lot more explicit, and then it's, like, sanding it is maybe not necessarily, but, like, you know, there's a way of, like, doing allusions, like, finding your way, picking your battles on, like, where you're going to bring this stuff up. Like, you know, do you do that in the beginning of the movie when you want to, like, you always talk about, like, the slave trade, or you do that at the end once you've, like, you know, with Killmonger's final line and you've built up some momentum. But, like, the movie opens in the first minute or so being like, yo, there's an imagery of slavery. Like, and that was at least where I got a sense early on, like, oh, okay, like, this is where you're setting up the stakes of Wakanda in a way that is both the outer conflict and the inner conflict of its own people.
Totally. And so then here's where I say there are two politics to this film, I think. The first is this notion of compromise with the revolutionary spirit, right? Yes, we have to pull down our borders because they fight. And in the end, Black Panther, T'Challa, kills Killmonger, stabbing him in the heart in the chest with a dagger, wounding him severely. I guess he doesn't kill him technically. Takes him to see the sunset, look at over how beautiful Wakanda is, offers to heal him, says, hey, we can take you downstairs and heal you. And Killmonger removes the dagger and bleeds out instantly, kind of dies instantly, saying, I would rather die a free man than live a slave. And which good.
And
good
asks
line.
To be buried in the ocean where he can be with those who threw themselves from slave ships because they knew that death was preferable to slavery.
Yes.
Which I think is a way of giving that character a form of victory, but it also leaves it
sucks,
really
dude. I hate it.
Uncomfortable.
I hate it for material reasons. Michael B. Jordan should be in more Marvel movies. Loki gets to live. Like, white folks get to live in those movies. And those villains are only as good as their performances. And that's part of why you don't get rid of a Loki. Michael B. Jordan did so well in this film. And I understand that it does give him a sort of victory here. But it also gives an alibi. It forces T'Challa not to have to listen to Killmonger, push him to be more radical.
Well, but that's the thing, though. Right. I think there's an implicit, like, what Killmonger has seen, what his father saw, is something that doesn't actually brook a whole lot of compromise. There is no room for the incrementalism that would absolutely follow Killmonger and T'Challa making peace. T'Challa would be going forward with, well, we must proceed. We will go forth in the world and improve it, but slowly and without, you know, without violence, without too much upheaval. And can kill, like, is a character like Killmonger philosophically ever going to be okay with that? Should he ever be okay with
that? No, and he should be on screen doing that. Like, that's firmly what I believe is, like, again, this is where I say it's an alibi. Now you don't have to write the scene in the next movie where he is, like, pushing against that. And that is what actually happens to radicals more often than not, right? And instead, what we do get is the incrementalism. What we do get at the end, and this is where I think Patrick is right, totally worse than that. What we get is what Patrick said, which is at least an answer, right? Which is like, they ask the question, and then T'Challa's answer at least.
I need to say it because I was fucking seething.
All right,
at
go
the
for
end
it.
Of this fucking
All
film.
You.
Okay. So the movie ends, and T'Challa's sort of had his, like, wow, I never thought about it like this, but maybe we do owe something to the wider world and need to go forth into it and break cover, basically, and share Wakanda's wealth and technology. They emphasize that a lot. It's technology with the world. And he's going to start by going to what is sort of, I think, meant to be interpreted as, like, low-income or public assistance housing in
Oakland. It's the same housing that Killmonger is from. It's the housing that his uncle was killed in. Yeah, it's the same apartment complex.
Yeah, so it's where we saw them at the start. He shows up, and he reveals to his sister that he bought the building. and he bought all the surrounding buildings. He bought the whole neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And what's it all going to become? A Wakandan outreach center with a focus on technology.
STEM centers, baby. Let's go.
Yeah. And what's going to happen to the people who live there? What happens to the neighborhood? Fuck that. The important thing is we tear down these negative symbols where mm-hmm. where people lived and maybe weren't entirely negative for, like, wasn't as simple as negative. Like,
right, like those kids were playing basketball outside. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
What's one thing that I actually love about this film is that I love a lot about this film. I want to be clear that this diatribe I have about the ending and about it's one of the two answers I think it gives is not the only, aren't the only feelings I have about this. But one of the things I think it does well is, like, it shows, like, inner city, quote unquote, Black America, and it isn't framed as being a terrible place. Like, it's kids playing basketball.
You don't hear police right. sirens in the background, which is you can right. 100% yes. see, like a 99% of the interpretations of the exact same scene yes. in other hands, like being like woo woo,
right.
like some guy
outside.
Running down the street. Yeah, there's a garbage can is on fire.
Cypress yes. Hill is blasting yes. somewhere.
Exactly, 100%. But yeah, Rob. Like, that's it, right? That's his answer is we open up schools and, like, I
and possibly even displace existing communities. Right. Like, that's right. the other fucked up part of this is, like, that's our solution.
It's especially and, oh,
go
sorry.
Ahead. No,
I was going to say, especially in Oakland in 2018, where I don't even know if you can find public assisted housing in Oakland because everybody who was middle class in San Francisco now lives in Oakland and everybody right. who's in Oakland now lives in Richmond. So maybe they should have set this in Richmond. I don't know.
So the thing here is that, like, this is one answer that is proposed inside of marginalized communities, especially the Black community, is like, hey, once you get it, you bring it back, right? Like, if you make it out, if you manage to make some money, figure out how to give back to the community. And I think that partially falls so flat for me because partially because of the displacement that Rob talked about, but also because it suggests that the thing that is missing from the American so-called meritocracy is merit. It's like, oh, if only the inner city kids all knew how to code, that would equal things out. And it's not that's not the thing. Like, you can look at numbers, at statistics of what college educated Black folks make versus college educated white folks. You can look at the value of housing in neighborhoods. You can look at what the wealth among families looks like. There are all of these statistics that show that you know, having education, having access to education, while it absolutely can help you on the individual level, does not actually fix systemic inequality at any sort of rate that you would think of as being impressive. And that is frustrating. It's frustrating that T'Challa's answer was, I'm going to go open Wakandan learning centers. But I think there is the second lesson, and it's way more material, which is, this movie is filled with incredible Black folks who all got paid a lot of money to tell a story about Black people interacting with each other, fighting each other, but still fundamentally, like, having a real debate about what is to be done about the state of things and being warm on the screen in a way. Like, the relationships between T'Challa and Shuri, between all of the women in the film, first of all, are incredible. Yeah. And their relationships together. But things like the handshake and the Wakanda, like, arm cross.
And the different ways we see it performed yes. in context yes. is so...
It was that stuff was powerful to me because it was so familiar and so warm and so, like, oh shit, right? Like, and it's a Marvel movie. Like, not just, there have been Black filmmakers for as long as there have been films, but it was so important for me to see that just, like, in the middle of high super CG, ridiculous Q laboratory. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, and it was so natural and it felt so real. And that to me is also sort of an answer, right? Like, Wakanda can't only make learning centers. Wakanda also has to start making movies. Wakanda has to also start kind of entering the public sphere and changing the way that the world thinks about Blackness. And maybe that's a step in that direction, but it's And that's also a long fight. And that's also not a light switch towards, you know, flipping anything. I still think that to some degree, you have to have material action, you know, in the form of protests, in the form of real physical pushback. But I'm like with Patrick, that I'm happy that these questions were engaged with, not just brought up as background.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Well, and I think,
and go ahead, Rob.
No, and I think one of the things that makes this work well here is we're talking about that tendency for Marvel movies to be a bit broad. And I think what separates this from something like Winter Soldier is, well, Winter Soldier has this terrible like lead anchor that is Hydra. And it ends up sort of asking all these like important questions, but then sort of offloading it onto this ridiculous like enemy organization. And it ends
up falling. Whoops, it's Nazis again.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it ends up falling super, super flat as sort of a metaphor for you know, the surveillance state and the war on terror. Where this succeeds is that a lot of its characters, in addition to being sort of like, there are good actors portraying these characters, but the characters themselves in a lot of ways are also sort of presenting different worldviews. The characters are their worldviews to an extent, right? So you have one of T'Challa's friends is, Daniel Kaluuya.
Wakabi is the guy's name.
Yeah. So yeah, he's like his character's name. Like military chief of staff, and he's sort of a utopian imperialist in some ways. Like right at the start, he's already on board with like Wakanda has the means, it has the resources, the world is disordered, just give me the word and I will build an empire of liberation and order for you.
Yeah.
And T'Challa sort of trying to rein that in. And then you have other characters someone who pretty much steals the film, Winston Duke's M'Baku.
Yeah, oh my God, M'Baku is so good.
And you should go, like, a side note, like, go look up the history of that character, because, like, he's based on a character called Manape with, like, a very bad, very racist history in the Black Panther comic arcs. And part of what I think was really impressive what Ryan Coogler did was to, rather than, like, I listened to an interview with, like, Ta-Nehisi Coates talking about his run and, like, how he looked at various racist parts of the Black Panther universe and said, nah, we're going to put this to the side. We're just going to, you know, make our own way through this. Right. And actually, Ryan Coogler said, and there's a valid, totally valid options for how to address those like, deeply problematic parts of Black Panther's history. But instead, Ryan Coogler said, like, well, like, how do we, like, take ownership of this, like, reshape it into something that is interesting? And obviously, one, not calling it Manape is a good way to start.
Big help. Yeah. but also not getting rid of the ape imagery, right? Like,
no.
And in fact, I believe from a thread that I was reading pretty recently, one of the weird things is like Wakanda, because Wakanda exists in a fictional place in Africa, I think Eastern Africa is from the map, if I recall. There is no history of mythology inside of Wakanda in this film, right? Like the Black Panther, the tribe of that the Black Panther comes from worships Bast, the Egyptian goddess. And M'Baku, I think the ape god that he names is a Hindu god, right? Which is really interesting. I forget. I think I saw Siobhan Bhatt talking about this on Twitter. And I can't quite remember the name of the god. Do you remember, Rob?
Oh, Hanuman.
Yeah. I think that's super interesting. It's like, okay, we're still going to have the ape imagery. We're still going to have this like giant castle, this giant fortress with an ape holding it up in the mountains, which is rad as hell. But we're going to ground it in a specific, you know, it's a name drop, so it's not maybe grounded is too strong. But hey, look, there are people in the world who have looked at apes as deities. And so like let's see if there's a way to reconfigure this, to rehabilitate it in some way that recognizes its history, but also lets an actor like Winston Duke just knock it out of the fucking park sheer screen presence alone.
Like, it reminded me so much of like what I enjoy about good Tom Hardy performances. Just the like, you feel like a character from a completely different movie has briefly intersected with the movie you're watching and is just like enjoying watching the confusion and chaos he sows with the other performances and actors and then disappears. But he's sort of there as this like representative of, well, even in these, in a utopia like Wakanda, there are still people who feel disenfranchised or divorced from the center of power. And there is no effort made or no outreach made to try to include them in political life, in the sharing and wielding of power. And how do you sort of bridge those gaps, and how do you even make your appeal to people like that? Like, late in the movie, like, T'Challa is very much making sort of an appeal to, like, Pan-Africanism.
Yeah.
To M'Baku. And M'Baku sort of rightly calls him on how incredibly self-serving it is at this moment, when there's an outside threat, to then suddenly come around to this idea that, like, you know, really, the Jabari clan are just like us. And that's the first they're hearing of it.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, there's something to that.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I love how it contends with that. Danielle, what were you going to say?
Yeah. I was going to say, even, and on a very sort of real and enjoyable level, he also absolutely steals one of the funniest scenes. I mean, he and Shuri both have some of the, like, straight up funniest lines in the movie as well, especially when he's sort of, you know, when, Martin Freeman, I guess his name is Everett, whatever. The crappy, skinny
the CIA guy.
Dude, kind of comes in with, you know, royalty, basically, like Ramonda and Nakia. Mm-hmm. And he's all like, whoa, explaining things. And he just sort of shuts him down. He kind of tells him, like, well, don't speak again. Well, and then he goes in with the greatest line ever of, like, I'm going to feed you to my children. And then he starts cracking up. And he's just, like, playing off of the racist stereotype, and then cracks up and is like, we're vegetarians. It's just, it's such a wonderful, wonderful moment. That is, like, God, it got, like, the greatest roar of laughter in my audience. And it was, oh, my God.
It was very good. It was very good.
There was that tweet going around that I really enjoyed that was like, as a white person, I really enjoyed being represented in Black Panther as the person in the background that just wants to help out when he's asked or needed. God.
Yeah. I'm just going to – let me shout out something real quick, though, to T'Challa. Yo, quick word of advice, my king. Don't fucking work with the CIA. Going forward, don't do it.
I wonder – that is one of the like the in terms of a political fault of the movie that I thought it could have addressed even it by nodding at it would have been like I understand like the world that Black Panther steps into as like the 19th film in you know the Marvel universe, like there are certain like parts of the world building that Black Panther like just has to deal with that are constructs of what it's walking into, but it seemed like given all the other nods like and the imagery that the movie touches on, there could have been at least a joke, an aside, something that sort of recognized like the hypocrisy of like an in-universe world of Wakanda, like immediately being like, yeah, let's just like hand over some tech and like start working with the, you know, the CIA. Like they haven't tried to fuck with us. And like, because a lot of the imagery, like showing World War II, like showing the slave trade, like at that point you're invoking parts of real world history, which like, and you know, you're going to play with, you're going to throw away different. It just seems like that was one of those moments where if the movie had just like poked at it a little bit, I think it would have been enough to be like, hey, look, like we're stuck in this little in this box to a certain extent. I'm not sure the movie had to give him like a redemption arc either towards the end. I think that could have been left on the cutting room floor. And even like to touch on the ending stuff from earlier, I actually think like you know, we can easily criticize, you know, the Bill Gates Foundation opening of a coding center in Oakland. I think it makes a lot of sense for T'Challa as a character. I think the politics of it are frustrating relative to the sort of far more progressive radical politics that are introduced by Killmonger. But I think like for T'Challa, like he represents in some form like a form of like incrementalism and that makes sense for his character. And I wonder and hope that, you know, whether Ryan Coogler is associated with the, you know, the movies going beyond this, that I would hope maybe Well, one, I wish in that ending with the opening of like a, the equivalent of a coding center, if they'd even just poked fun at that a little bit, you know, like if like Shuri had like made a joke about like, well, this is kind of like bullshit, like we're going to do more than this, right? Like if there had just been like an acknowledgement that the, like, hey, you're doing the right thing, but also like,
is this really enough? Yeah.
And I think that would have been a way of addressing, like, if Killmonger, like, had to die because that, like, was the, whatever, you know, Coogler felt that was a fitting thing for his character, was its own form of victory for that, the character, whatever, whatever. Like, the, there should have been some way of, like, keeping the spirit of Killmonger's, like, ideology, like, kind of, like, in the background there. And I wonder if the future of the movies, hopefully, that I would hope, what I want from the character is, like, the radicalization of Black Panther. Like, I wonder if that, like, you know, picks up Infinity War with, like,
and Thanos survives.
And Kaluuya survives, yes.
Yeah. And so who knows from there what happens with Kaluuya. The thing, like, I just want to hit this one more time because I want to make sure, because I can imagine the forum posts already from people who are like, hey, why is this a bad thing? Or why is Killmonger dying a bad thing? Everyone involved thought that was the right decision. Like, the notion of imagining a black utopia, what's so powerful about it is that, and this is true for a lot of Afrofuturism and not just this film, but what's so powerful about it is that it is done in the face of pragmatism, and a pragmatism that you've been forced to live with your entire life. That pragmatism is what tells you that dying a free man is better than living a slave. That's not a dream. That's not victory. Dying as a black man is a thing that should be just as terrible, just as fruitless, as living as a slave. Those two things should not be relegated when we are dreaming of utopia to being one better than the other. Both of those should be gone. And it is fine for, I'm fine that Killmonger loses in the end. I understand what this is. I don't expect the version of this where, like, we get like radical Wakanda now, and like everyone is like, subscribe to my fucking newsletter. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. But also, it's frustrating that it couldn't have dreamt something better. And I kind of push back on the notion that death is victory. Because it's release, certainly, and it's not a life of ongoing failure, but it doesn't change the world. And victory for when we're imagining these sorts of utopian visions should be about changing the world in some way. And so I just wish maybe he would have left. I wish he would have been there in spirit afterwards in that conversation where Shuri, in our imagined version of this ending, where Shuri goes like, this isn't it, is it? And then like we pan back over and it's like the Eric Killmonger Center for some other shit that is not just teaching you some stuff. Like, maybe it is about income redistribution. Wakanda is super rich. You know, maybe it is like a big housing community that's actually going to give people new homes in the community. Like, things like that that are actually about spreading wealth, that are actually about lifting people out of their circumstances directly instead of this idea of meritocracy, which is so fascinating about Killmonger, because he is presented as like he had nothing and then he became king. He fought until he was king. He did pull himself up by his bootstraps, yet at the same time doesn't believe that should be true for the rest of the world who is oppressed. And that's why I think that character works so well, and why I wanted something. I'm fine with the ending. I just can't swallow it as a victory for him. I'm glad I'm getting this off my chest. It's good. I've been sitting on this for weeks.
So maybe he can appear like in the spirit world. Yeah, or something, you know what I mean.
Like, he was a Black Panther. Options, that's true. You know, like, that's true. We'll like, get so that.
I'm,
you're right.
I'm hoping maybe they're like, you know, it's a comic movie. They're
yes,
and Black Panther's like mythology like opens the door for. I don't know, maybe Shuri, like, can you put a spirit in like a computer? Chip so Killmonger could yell at T'Challa?
Oh, that'd be really good. Like, probably. The answer is probably. Also, all the tech in this movie is so fucking good. Like, there's a moment in the first 20
minutes.
Where
they guide the ships with the sand. I mean,
that's like, incredibly good. Yeah,
and they don't explain it. They don't explain it. They just let the technology speak for itself, which is like really, a lot of movies that have future tech, like, always want to explain, like, yo, here's how this shit works.
Yeah. Oh, it's like, nano sand. Like, no, shut up. the shot of just, like, they have, like, a GPS that's tracking these trucks in this convoy, and it's all made up of this black sand, and there's the shot of T'Challa picking one of the jeeps up and, like, looking at it, and then placing it back down in formation, and it's, like, animated. So good. Like, just, like, chills on the design of that stuff. And then all of Shuri's equipment in her lab.
Everything.
Yeah. And also the costuming, right? Like the sequence.
Oh my god.
The sequence when is that Shuri and Nakia, or is that Shuri and Okoye who come out, where Shuri has like the panther gauntlets, and then
That's Okoye.
That's Nakia, right? Shuri and you both said different things.
No, Okoye stays out and fights. And
all right,
Nakia...
she's fighting against Mbaku, who is her lover.
She's on the field.
Right.
That's
yes,
right.
Yes. Yeah. But like all of their gear is so sweet. Like it's just so good. It's actually so good that I was kind of bummed by the CG in the panther fight at the end a little bit.
Oh, it's like, because... it's a Marvel movie now.
Yeah, because the prop fighting with Killmonger, Shuri, and Okoye was so good.
Well, and also those scenes, the sort of hand-to-hand combat scenes, like in the water, were just incredible. Both of those scenes were absolutely incredible.
Which ones were in the water?
Like the King's Moot. I'm not sure exactly what you would call it, but like
the King's Moot.
You know.
Yeah,
The king contention scenes, both of them were utterly incredible. Like, best fight scenes that you'll see in this type of movie. Because they're not CG and bullshit. You know, it's like...
If you haven't seen Creed, the fight scenes are far better in Creed than they are in Black Panther. Oh, like, yes. The final fighting sequence in Creed, like the single shot, like a boxing sequence with Michael B. Jordan is one of, like... the coolest fighting. Like, I'm not surprised that Black Panthers are like a cut above the rest, but if you thought the one-on-ones in Black Panther were good, like, go back and watch Creed, because they are like on one, there's no green screen, and it's like I could see the green screen watching those scenes, and it's like the fighting was good enough that like I was sometimes able to not see it, but like I wish I could like get like a filter for my one of those things where like I've just seen enough movies where like I can spot bad or mediocre green screening, and I could see it in those scenes, and it was just like, oh, the fighting is so good, but like I can tell that that's a
all of this
behind you.
Yeah,
all of this is grading on a Marvel curve. Like I obviously like watch fighting all day every day and train in fighting all the time, so like nothing is ever actually realistic, but like for a Marvel movie, this was like very it actually kind of got that actual spirit of how intense it can be to fight a person. So that was rad. I wanted to bring up also, while we're talking about I guess we've gotten away with it a little bit, but I really wanted to talk about the museum scene in particular and sort of the implication of sort of the white academia and what it has sort of done to Black folks and sort of generally how Eric is treated when he kind of first walks into that museum one of the most subtly illustrative points in that entire movie, and God, it's really good. It's a really great scene.
What's that one line he likes when he grabs the mask and doesn't he say
he's
something like
I just like it or something like that?
No, it's like, something like where he's like, oh well, your people would have just taken it. Something like what I mean?
Yeah.
There were a bunch of good. He had a lot of great lines.
Oh my God, yeah.
That sequence is so good, partially just because, again, Michael B. Jordan's swagger is just off the charts. Just like, I want to watch this dude do anything. Is like the second he's on screen for me, he's also just like he just looks so good. His outfit is just
so much
so
confidence.
Good.
Like it just oozes the moment he comes on screen, it's like you feel it like on a physical level. Like I think I mentioned this in our Discord chat that there's the scene where Michael B. Jordan takes off his shirt during the one-on-one later in the film, there was an audible fucking gasp.
Oh yeah.
He's an attractive man, let me tell you.
I looked over to my wife and her eyes were bugging. I was like, "Oh yeah." She's like, and she goes, "Yeah? What the fuck? Do you blame me?" And I was like, no.
But so like one of the things I like about this is a lot of the terms we're talking about here when we're describing Mbaku, when we're describing Killmonger, if these characters were the only Black characters in these films, and we were saying, oh, they have such an imposing presence, they're so big, and they're big. Right, like, right. Mboko is that boy big as hell. Winston Duke is big.
Big boy season has come to Black Panther.
Oh my God, has it? But it also, Chadwick Boseman's T'Challa is lithe and is athletic, and is also ripped. Sure. They're all ripped because they're all
also
superheroes.
He's like 42 or something.
Oh my God, is he?
He is old. Like,
Holy shit!
When I saw him in the movie, I was like, oh, you know, he's like 33, you know, yeah. something like that.
Nah, I didn't know he was that old.
Chadwick Boseman's old.
Shit.
Yeah.
I kind of like that. I'm kind of okay with that.
Makes you rethink your life.
Yeah. But yeah, but because there was a variety of blackness on play here, this is true for the women too, right? Like Angela, yeah. ranging in age from Angela Bassett, who plays T'Challa's mother, through all of the supporting cast who are all the various other important women in Wakanda, like there's a variety of what blackness looks like and sounds like and moves like, and that opens up the field in a way so that when you have characters as imposing and physical as Michael B. Jordan, these are terms that traditionally when I would read a review like, and Michael B. Jordan was so physically imposing, I'd be like, oh, you right. motherfucker, like you like dig in just a little bit to what you're saying. But here there's the breadth in the room that allows you to have those depictions and to have them without the kind of weak connotation that's normally attached to them. I will say in that museum scene, there's a bit where he goes like, you got to watch what you put in your body, girl. And I was like, because he had fed her poison or whatever in her tea. And I was like, oh no, is he going to become like a super Hotep, like Twitter, all black men are kings type dude? Because that sounded so much like some shit you would see in Hotep Twitter. And if you don't know what Hotep Twitter is, just go to Wikipedia, just do some searching. It's fine. Just know that we were all kings once and that, you know, we got to be better than this and that man's place is officially on the throne, you know? And that's where I thought Killmonger was going, and it wasn't, thankfully. He went a much more radical place. But I guess here's a question. Danielle, during our last movie-based Waypoint 101, we talked a lot about the gender politics of Blade Runner 2049. Yeah. And I'm curious here, because I think I've said over and over, oh, the women were all so interesting and so strong, and I love them in this. But I'm curious about your take on this as someone who has strong feelings about the gender politics of Blade Runner. What did you feel about these characters and their position in Wakanda specifically?
For the most part, I was really, really pleased. There was a couple of scenes that I was kind of like, why couldn't she be queen? You know, that one scene where Nakia sort of refuses to drink I forget exactly what it's called.
It's the whatever from the flower that Black Panther power
flower.
Comes from.
Yeah, it was kind of like, that would have been really fucking cool if she were, you know, actually sort of took the throne a little bit. I understand she's a spy. I get it. I know all the reasons. It's just, you know, personally, I wouldn't have minded. Because there is a lot of sort of traditional, like, you know, patriarchal roles here, of course. There are mm-hmm. kings there. And, of course, women can still be queen. But it does seem to be like that, like, the actual royalty structure is pretty traditional. However, right. I was really thrilled that Okoya, her name, right? Okoya?
Oh, I think that's right.
Okay. So
I had a list up a second ago for
Okoya?
Pronunciation. Okoya?
I just want to pronounce it right so I don't sound like an idiot. I love that she was a general.
Okoya.
Oh, Okoya.
It ends up on the op. Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha. Okoya. She was a fucking badass general. And not in a shitty fascist way. In an actual, like, I have honor. Like, I care so much about how I serve and how I carry myself. That was incredible. And I love the fact that she had a scene with Nakia, who is, you know, a spy, that in any other movie, or it feels like any other movie, any other sort of traditional action movie, you know, the conflict between the spy and the soldier would have been two fucking dudes just being like, uh-huh. oh, you don't have honor? No, I serve my country in a different way. You know, like the fact that scene is between two black women who both have so much merit to their approach, both have so much honor to their name, like, was incredible and beautiful and, like, really, really moving in a lot of ways. And also the fact that, like, a lot of the comic relief also kind of fell to a woman character, which is also beautiful. Usually that's like the quirky dude. No, in this movie, it was a quirky young lady who was awesome. Shuri was hilarious.
Shuri's so good.
Hilarious. Yeah. And she was like pissed off that she had to wear the corset for a while. That was funny. Uh-huh. Like she keeps stealing the scenes and being funny and being smart in the role that would always be like the quirky nerdy guy kind of thing. So I really liked that aspect that, like, women were absolutely present in these very, like, powerful roles and not kind of trapped in the usual, like, oh, she has three lines.
Yeah,
you know, maybe totally. Angela Bassett a little bit was kind of, you know, she
certainly underutilized.
Had a little bit underutilized. She certainly had, like, a great deal of dignity and a great deal of, like, you know, respect and honor. But, yeah, I don't know if she was fully you know, maybe she could have been a little bit more front and center. Maybe if you kicked out, what's his face, the scrawny white dude, you know, I'm just saying.
Supposedly original cut of this movie is 4 hours long. Put out the four-hour version.
Please do.
Yeah, I mean,
like her brushing her teeth would be, you know.
The pee tape also. Just while we're talking about things we want to see released, release the pee tape. Black Panther, I need you to go to Russia. You have a special mission, T'Challa.
Go get Black Widow.
Uh-huh.
Figure it out.
Figure it out. Yep, I believe in you.
She'll help.
Yep. God. So yeah, I think that's pretty much what I have. I guess one more little quick call out that I loved was we talked a little bit about how the what was the name of the mountain tribe that M'Baku is the head of
Jabari.
Again?
Oh, Jabari.
The Jabari. Yeah. I love not just the Jabari, but the way that each of the different tribes that make up the Wakandan kind of council all have different fashion, all have a different... There's a sense of history and a sense of difference that doesn't flatten out, that doesn't flatten out to a sort of like, oh, we're all from Africa. It is a sort of Pan-African vision of culture that suggests that kind of speaks to that mythology, the kind of history of Wakanda as being like, oh, this thing happened, the vibranium came, and then these great tribes were kind of united minus the Jabari. And I appreciated that at least. You know, like I it's going to be weird because it's always going to be a comic book version of tribal Africa, which means there's always going to be moments where you're like, but I think that it ended up being a really cool presentation of some kind of like fashion and a kind of historical tradition and stuff like that that came together. I only wish we got a little bit more ground level Wakanda. What's it like to live in Wakanda? Is there a parliament? Is there any sort of representational government, or are we kind of just left to hope that whoever has the Black Panther juice in them right now is like good? I want to know more about that stuff, and hopefully a sequel or some other stuff kind of digs in there a little bit. But other than that, I think I've said my piece here. Anyone else have any kind of final thoughts?
So I have a question, or it's something I really like about the movie, but then also left me wondering about something.
Sure.
Okay. So one of the things I love in this movie is that the way it is structured, we see the ascent of two different kings going through the same rituals. The first time we go through it, it is T'Challa's ascension to the throne, and the rituals are all positive and beautiful and affirming. So like, you know, him stepping out of, you know, his flagship basically into the ceremonial ring, I guess, in the waterfalls with all the tribal leaders gathered.
The king moot.
It's a great moment. Yeah. It's affirming. It's beautiful. It's cool as hell. When he goes through the more mystical part of the ritual, where he is given the Black Panther juice, I guess, and goes to the place of the ancestors and converses with his father in this like idyllic and eerily beautiful, like, African plain. It's really cool seeing him go through all this. We see Killmonger go through it later in the film. And all the rituals where they were reassuring and affirming and beautiful before have become upsetting or othering. And not just in terms of, holy shit, like, the guy who killed T'Challa is now taking over the country, but even Killmonger feels alienated by the rituals as he goes through them. When he goes through the mystical, when he goes through the ritual and converses with his father, he doesn't go to the African plane. He goes back to that apartment in Oakland,
right,
and has a conversation with his father. It's a great scene, and I like that they don't present the apartment as some sort of hellish landscape. It's just that's home to him. Right. But the plane is visible beyond the through those windows, right? It's elsewhere and sort of out of reach. It's not for him. For him, there's that apartment and memories of his father who was killed. And on the one hand, I kind of loved that it sort of drew this line between the experiences and how context and experience change the meaning of these things from when T'Challa goes through them versus when Eric Killmonger goes through them. On the other hand, I was left with a reservation that it kind of felt like what it was presenting, where T'Challa's sort of, you know, sent to kingship, his expressions of traditional manhood in his culture were positive and affirming. Killmongers are basically defined by absence, by right. loss. And there's kind of this implication that somehow inherently, because of his experiences, like, Killmonger is in some ways a mutilated spirit and sort of divorced from these rituals. He can't connect with them. But then it's not really shown that he has anything to connect to, which is why he can connect to his father, but even that memory is sort of poisoned by loss. And I kind of came away ambivalent. Like, I think structurally it's beautiful. I think the way it's portrayed is right. beautiful. I'm wondering about the implication.
I mean, I think the implication is partially to shake that ritual a little bit, which then gets shaken further when T'Challa goes through it again, right? And realizes, like, oh yeah, this place is real, and my father is here, but my father is a faulty man. To be here is not in and of itself, does not mean that you were a perfect individual. This is not a heaven of perfection. This is not a place where, like, everything, if it feels that way to begin with, I think it's largely because T'Challa believes it will be, and because he hasn't begun asking those questions yet. And I pretty much line up with you in the terms of, like, the Eric version of it being about loss and also about distance. He could never be there because that connection was ripped from him, in the way that it was ripped from, you know, everyone who was part of the diaspora. You know, I don't know what tribe I was once part of that I've descended from. You trace the records back, they don't go that far. It will always be a purple light coming through the window. It can never be feet on the ground. And I think that's pretty appropriate for Eric. And I think that it's, what I still think works is that I still think that that scene has a warmth to it.
Yes.
There's a smile when his father sees him with the book, and you almost expect it to be you expect chiding. You expect, don't go through my things. And instead he like rewards his son's curiosity. And so there is warmth where we can find it. And the fact that that is what the heart of Eric's kind of relationship with his father is, the heart of his struggle. Like, he does want there to be a world where there can be happiness. He just doesn't have it. And he doesn't think that the way you get it is through this sort of, like, soft push towards equality. And in fact, thinks it's too late for
him. And why does he have to wait 30 years for it to happen?
Yes, right. Exactly.
Or 50 years. Yes. Or for his children's
Or for his children's children's
why
children's
it,
children.
Why can't it happen to him?
Right. Especially when the rest of the world is doing the things already that he would be chided for doing. You know, like, that's the thing that's, I think, is so interesting here. And part of why I wish they engage with the CIA stuff so much, right? Like,
because Killmonger is essentially like a product of Wakanda and United States foreign
yep,
policy.
Yep,
like, his 100%. Body is a reflection of United States interventionist, meddling in elections, toppling over
exactly.
Other governments.
He's like, not doing
it,
a unique
it,
thing.
It is one of those things where when I did say that the movie doesn't talk about like the CIA's role in history, like, I guess, like, Killmonger's yeah. body speaks to that.
Yeah.
But I wish it was, like, the movie makes its choices about what it chooses to be vocal about and what it chooses to imbue through imagery or illusion or metaphor. And, like, there is a very powerful visual metaphor of awful interventionist United States foreign policy over decades on Killmonger's body. I guess I wish, to like revise what I said before, I wish that they had said it.
Well,
I wish that was something that was like said out loud a little more.
I think in this movie's defense, like, the Asian guy does explicitly call it out. When they're trying to figure out what Killmonger is up to, he sort of admits in kind of a weirdly chirpy, that's just the way that character's
that's
portrayed.
That's that character. Yeah,
fucking chirpy, apple polishing know-it-all. He's like, well, actually, I know what's going on. He's going through our CIA playbook for destabilization.
Right.
And fit it, like,
yeah,
and
right.
What do you know? Like, within 48 hours of Killmonger showing up, there's a civil war in an African country. Like,
yep. Absolutely. God. That's true. That's totally true. So, yeah, that's in there. Nice catch.
Side note about Michael B. Jordan's body and the bumps on it. I was reading some behind-the-scenes stuff about, like, the costuming on the movie, and apparently for every scene that he had to shoot where he had to show those bumps on his body. He then had to be wiped down by four men with oils for 3 hours in order to get it off of his body.
Oh, my God.
So there's a visual for
listen,
you.
Listen, listen.
There's a great job. Those four guys. Best job on the whole movie.
being the king comes with privilege, you know?
You know?
You know? I'm just saying. Shit. All right. I think that should do it for us today. Thank you so much for listening. I'm glad this movie turned out good. I was very worried about it, honestly. Like, it was one of those things that for years had kind of hung over me. It's like, don't fuck this up. But also, it's unfair that I say that, because I don't say that about Doctor Strange. I don't, and it fucked it up. I don't say that about a lot of Marvel films, because I'm just not that invested. And it's like that double bind, right? Of like, oh, I really want this thing that represents something I'm close with to do well and to actually succeed at what it's intending. But also, it's unfair to put that all on a single filmmaker, on a cast and crew that I wouldn't put on other things. But here's the pragmatism, right? Like, there it is again. Neither of those choices is particularly great, but I'm glad it worked out. I'm glad that this was a great thing.
I'm glad Black Panther being good
hopefully allows other movies to be bad, right? Like, that's like, I think part of what you're articulating there is like if Black Panther was mediocre, like underperformed financial projections,
we would not be getting another Black Panther. We would be,
you don't get like Black Panther or you don't get the, maybe you get another Black Panther, but you don't get the ripple effect of Black Panther.
Right.
And like Black Panther being good and financially successful allows other movies to be bad and fail, because we don't chide like white filmmakers or white comic characters for like fucking up like what they represent when there's a bad, it's just a bad movie. It's just a bad script. It was a bad character. And it's like that's part of the weight of Black Panther was by elevating it itself, it elevates everyone else and just creates, like, I'm excited to see what 5 years.
Give me the Storm
like
movie. I want
here.
The Storm movie.
Yes,
stop
please.
Saying you can't do the Storm movie. You can do it. I believe in you. God. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for listening. As always, if you have other questions, you can send them to gaming@vice.com, and there will probably be a really great conversation about the film. I think there actually is already a pretty great conversation about the film on the forums, but there will probably be another one in this forum thread, so you can go to discourse.zone to check that out, or forum.waypoint.vice.com. Where can people find you, Danielle?
At DanielleRI.
What about you, Patrick?
Put Shuri in the next Spider-Man movie. I want to see her hang out with Tom Holland.
Oh,
I think that would be dope.
Instead of Spider-Man, hear me out. Instead of ever making another Spider-Man again, just make her the star of all those movies. How about that?
Sure, she can become Spider-Gwen. Like,
there
they're not
going to
make her.
Make
Shuri becomes Black Panther in the comics eventually, but like that's too soon for that. So she can go become Spider-Gwen. That's fine.
Yeah, that's cool.
What about you, Rob Zachney?
At Rob Zachney.
And you find me at Austin_Walker. You can find Waypoint on Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice, youtube.com/waypointvice, and twitch.tv/waypoint. Find all of our articles, waypoint.vice.com. Got a lot going on this week. Into the Breach review just went up today, so go listen to that, or watch that, or read that. Read is the verb I wanted. Read. And then on Friday, we're going to have some Far Cry 5 preview stuff coming out. Interview with creative director Dan Hay, as well as with a consultant on the project who kind of consulted on their use of cults. We also will have a short video about a very goofy thing that happened to me while playing. And then I think we're going to do a stream where we look at about an hour of footage and kind of talk through what the preview event was like and some of the stuff that I saw. So look forward to that. That'll be exciting to do. Until then, Danielle, let take
be
us out.
Be good and be good at it.
Wakanda forever.
I'm just feeling it.
I'm just feeling it. Yes, good, good. God, he's so good. All right, bye.
He's amazing.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at yoquierodineropodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.